Hey, I'm Waylon.
And I'm Allie. Welcome back to the Entrepreneurs Podcast, a podcast formed by women entrepreneurs. Every week, we share insightful and inspiring conversations with women entrepreneurs from around the world. To check out our past episodes and be notified in our future ones, subscribe to us on whatever podcast platform you're listening to us on now.
Today, we're chatting with Celeste Perez, the founder and CEO of Droplet.
Get ready as we talk to Celeste about her journey of discovering entrepreneurship and her identity, on building brands in the food and beverage industry as a woman, and on funding her business.
Hello and welcome back to the Entrepreneurs Podcast. We are so excited and honored to have Celeste here with us today. Just her vibe, her energy, if you're watching the video, you will see the cutest dog with Celeste today. But super excited to have you on the podcast. How are you doing today?
I'm good. And this is Gigi. She's the cutest dog, not me. Thanks for having me.
We are so excited to get into it. And you are a serial entrepreneur. You are passionate as anything. But before we get started, we want everyone to know the question that is begging all of our audience, which we ask all our guests: what is something that excites you when you wake up in the morning?
When I wake up in the morning, honestly, mm-hmm. it's my makeup routine.
Do tell.
You know, it's been tough for us, extroverts in this pandemic because there's like nowhere to go, but I love getting dressed in the morning. It's just something that my mom did when she, you know, when I was a kid, she'd go to work and put on her outfit, her lipstick, her perfume. And it was just such a moment of safety, I guess, for me, like knowing my mom was taking care of herself. She would leave before I would wake up. And so I just like, I loved even just the smell or just like listening to her do that. And so for me, what I look forward to first thing when I wake up, it's like, oh, today I get to do that process, you know, like the putting on my armor, my face, and then getting ready to face the day.
I absolutely love that. And I think there's something so special about having like that safety routine that you like know consistently it's something that you can look forward to. Do you have a favorite like makeup product or something that you've really enjoyed trying recently?
Oh, yeah. I love Clean Beauty. So I used to have really bad skin. And actually my first business was a skincare line, you know, organic skincare that doesn't have chemicals that are harmful to you. Like that was a really important thing for me. I started that when I was 23. So for me, like I love makeup too. I think to do good skin, you also have to have makeup that supports that. And so I love Wonder Beauty, especially. Wonder Beauty has a lot of really great cosmetics and the best mascara. And Kosas actually is really great for like foundations and things like that. So, but yeah, I actually have something like 100 lipsticks.
Queen.
It's been rough.
It's fun.
Like wearing a mask and lipstick is a hot mess.
Oh no. Yeah. I have a friend who works at L'Oreal and he told me that lipstick sales went down a lot during COVID, which obviously makes sense. However, everyone's only looking at your eyebrows and eyes now. So mascara, eyebrow pencil, eyeshadow, it's having its moment this year. So, you know,
it'll
go up and down. Yeah. There's two things that I love that you said though. One was about seeing your mom put her makeup on as a sign that she's caring and loving herself. Like I never thought of it that way. Like we always think about it for ourselves, but I think not to get like too sad, but like one of the saddest or scariest things would be to see like your mother who had been putting on her makeup her entire life, stopping doing that. As she's getting older, you're like, she's not doing something that she, again, like her armor, she's not putting her armor to face the world anymore. So love that visualization. And the second thing, the smell, like I'm staying here, as I mentioned, here in Miami, visiting my grandparents. And from a young age, my grandmother, she had this MAC lipstick that she would like, one side was like a lipstick and the other side was like a gloss. My sister and I would smell it like 100 meters before her coming in. Like it was so strong. And it was one of those lipsticks like you put on and like it doesn't come off. So yeah. We would be like 5 years old putting it off and it's like it's a tattoo. So love everything you're sharing. So before we get started and trying to think of it, I'd love to do a little bit intro of you, if you may allow me. So Celeste is a Filipino-American creative entrepreneur with experience in branding, product development, multimedia content creation, and marketing. Her latest food and beverage product is Droplet, a stress-balancing adaptogen beverage. Since its launch in March of 2020 during COVID, amazing, Droplet has since won 2 Dye Line Awards in brand identity and packaging. finalist in BevNet's new beverage, and just a ton of other awards that everyone should be thoroughly impressed with. And her brand, you can find it at drinkdroplet.com. You can find it at Erewhon, Urban Outfitters, and a bunch of other retailers in the EU, USA, North America. But other than that, Celeste is also just a absolute rock star doing culinary tours for companies like Google, Airbnb, YouTube. She does these bite-sized travel videos that are just fantastic. In 2017, Celeste also launched Artful, an online design studio providing meaningful work for creative women worldwide. So Celeste, you've got a lot going on. There's tons of wonderful work with you out there on your website, your Instagram, your LinkedIn. What is something that people don't know about you that you would wish more people did?
You know, honestly, it does look like so much on the outside, but it's actually a lot of work. And it's like, I think that's the one thing. I'm good at social media. And what I want people to know is social media is not like the 100% representation of how it went. You know, mm-hmm. You can read those highlights, but knowing the work and the journey and the difficulty, that's the part that I wish people understood more. You know, some of us go through a lot and some of us carry it well, you know, and I think I'm one of those people who probably carries it well on the outside. But I mean, that's why Droplet was so important. Starting a self-care brand was so important because I needed to build it into my company, the things that I have to do every day.
100%. I think a lot of women founders that we've talked to on this podcast specifically tell us that, you know, there's like a very famous narrative of what woman entrepreneurship looks like through social media, where, you know, everything looks perfect. It looks like they're doing a lot and it's so easy to do it. But I think specifically for young and rising entrepreneurs, it's so important to look up at role models like yourself, who show both sides, who show the successes, but also show the realities of the struggles. So I love that. And I hope that in today's podcast, we can share like the more authentic side of entrepreneurship. But in order to get started, we'd love to hop into your early stages of entrepreneurship. And I know you went to USC, so I'd love to know for our college students out there and our college students at USC, how were you involved in the entrepreneurial scene there? And did you know that you wanted to be an entrepreneur?
So I guess this story starts when I'm a kid, basically, right? I'm like, it's summer, you're like in sixth grade and you want something to do. And my thing was, let's start a business. And I'll make the business cards, I'll make the flyers, I'll get us a phone number. When you answer the phone, you gotta say this. Like, I have always been that kind of person. And the company was, you know, teddy bear grooming.
You know, amazing. Like, I was gonna say, the gap in the marketplace, we all knew. I love it though. I love it.
Right? It's like either that or a bake sale or whatever. But we were always doing things like that. And it was always fun to play business. But I hadn't grown up in a world where business was a thing. So, you know, like I knew people who had jobs. I knew people who started like, but I didn't actually know people who started things. It wasn't an option. So I didn't even know what the word entrepreneurship meant until I got to college. Like I literally went to college. I was supposed to be in med school, but you know how that goes for all of us creatives. I went to college and I realized that I love telling stories and I love the visual aspect. I like telling true stories because I think they're so incredible. And so broadcast was the answer for me, where I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be able to like tell people stories. I'm going to get awareness for these things, these like the things that I feel very strongly about. And broadcast was my major. And it wasn't until basically my final year at USC that I learned the word entrepreneurship. And I found out we had an entrepreneurship program, I guess, because I was super involved in school. I was in a bunch of different like organizations. I was in a leadership frat. She wasn't cool enough for the regular ones. I was in all these things. And what would happen was that my classmates would be like, Celeste, I'm starting this thing. Can you make a flyer? I'm starting this thing. Can you, you know, like, can you do our, help us with the design or whatever? And so that's actually how I got started with branding. And I didn't realize that that's what I was doing. And then somebody was like, Celeste, you love making things and you have like tons of great ideas. Like, why don't you do the entrepreneurship program? And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, I really thought I was so anti-business because I'm a bleeding heart. You know what I mean? Like, I love helping and I felt like business wasn't helping. And then I realized business could help. You know, and there's this thing called social entrepreneurship, and USC had just started that program. at the time. And so I ended up minoring entrepreneurship because that's, I didn't want to stay in school that much longer. But really learning in a quick span that that's actually, that's the thing that like lights me up every day is being able to create and putting things together. That's where I started.
It's so, so, so beautiful. One of the favorite things that you just said that really resonated with me was playing business. And this idea that you didn't know necessarily the word entrepreneur, because it's such a like a loaded term right now, particularly in California, where you think of like, you know, some tech bro in the hoodie, Silicon Valley, like you just like to play business. You like to help other people. You had a bleeding heart. You wanted to connect people. You wanted to involve yourselves in so many different roles, whatever those like posters meant for a big sale, for like a startup sprint, like whatever it was, you just wanted to do it. You didn't think of it like some sort of like, okay, check the box. It was like, this is just, I like the action. I don't care what the hell it's called. So I definitely see that. So I love that you were able to get your entrepreneurial journey started at USC. I have some friends there. I know it's a hugely entrepreneurial team and like a great, great space to be. So after creating Seesaw, you went to launch a skincare company, Nectar Skincare. What led you to create the company and what was something unexpected that you learned from it?
So I started, you know, stay in school kids, but but after college, so one thing you should know, my journey starts during the recession. I graduated right when the recession was really bad. Like when I started college, we'd get, like USC is an incredible school for networking, right?
For sure.
You want to apply to this job at this dream place. And it's like, yeah. And by the end, it was no jobs today, every day, you know? And especially my background in broadcast, like that was the time when people were starting to leave traditional journalists, like traditional journalism, like the New York Times or the, you know, local news. And there wasn't really a world of digital. Like Instagram mm-hmm. was barely alive. I think Twitter had just started. So that's the environment that I was stepping into. It was really not secure for a person with my background and also for anybody who was coming into the workforce at that time. So I kind of was like, well, if I'm not gonna get a job, and by the way, I've given up my resume like 100 times, like thousands, if not, over the last 15 years. And it's been kind of crazy to be like, wow, nobody wants this. But it was a timing, you know, it's not ever a you thing. It's very much oftentimes, especially when you know you do well and like you have, like I'd look at my degree and I'd look at the work I can do, my portfolio, and be like, why didn't they want this? And it's because it's just not for you. You know, it was not the right time. So I decided to go back to school because my parents were like, well, if you're not going to work, like, let's go back to school and continue your medical school journey. And that's funny because I went to UCLA for a second and I had to finish up just a couple of prereqs before going. And calculus is not my strong point.
And, is it anyone's strong point?
I feel like I could understand it a lot better now, but it was just not something that I was trying to do back then. And so I like literally only had to pass calculus and then it was like to the races. And right before the final, so it's like April, right? Right before the final, my professor is just like, hey, Celeste, I don't think you should take the final. And I'm like, oh, wow. Why? And he was like, because you're going to fail. I was like, that is offensive, but you're not wrong. And he was like, here's the deal, Celeste. There are so many ways to be successful, and this doesn't have to be the only path for you. He was like, look at your classmates. You know, you're different. And I really want to see you try something you're actually passionate about. But if you take this final, you're going to get a failing grade, and it's going to really affect your med school applications and where you're going to be able to go. You know, and he's like, I didn't want that for you. What I want you to do is go and explore. And if you want to come back, if you decide that medicine is for you, then come back with renewed commitment to the program. And instead of having a fail on your, on your transcript, you'll have an incomplete and you can complete it then and do really well on the final. Honestly, at the time I was like, so I'm really bad at math, you know? Just kind of like, okay, I am offended, but I agree. You know, like now that I look back, it was a blessing in disguise. But back then it was like, wow, that was really, I really did that poorly that my professor was like, don't take the class. So what I did is I went to Coachella and then immediately after started Nectar. because I was like, well, if I'm not doing medicine, what can I do that I'm passionate about? And I, you know, I had a test. Basically I was able to test that, that idea and build it. I was able to get a job at Disney for a little bit, and that actually really helped the journey, because it was at Disney Consumer Products that I learned about product development, taking something mm-hmm. from concept all the way through production at a mass scale, you know, like looking out for all the little details and things. And so, like, I think that just that summer was such a crazy summer, because it was me trying to go to med school, me being like, that's not gonna work. And then figuring out what I wanted to do, and then having at least being able to get like that job at Disney to mm-hmm. teach me what would really help me for the rest of my career.
I love it.
So it was a pretty magical experience.
Oh, Ali's the biggest Disney fan.
It was funny because I'm a big Disney fan as well. And my first day at work, they were like, oh, this one's, you know, like, they can tell who loves the parks, like the parks, and who just like wants to working at Disney. And it was girl who used to answer the phone, and she'd be like, have a magical day. And all the people who like just was like, you don't have to say that. Like, that's kind of annoying. We literally just work at a consumer products company, you know?
Well, you basically answered our next question. We were going to ask you how you were able to use your corporate roles as a founder. And I think you do it in such a beautiful way, where you were able to learn so much about product development at Disney and transfer that to your skincare brand. But I'd love to switch gears a little and ask how you were able to create a brand around yourself. I feel like when I look at your personal website and everything that you do, you're able to, like, you as Celeste has a brand identity. And I'd love to dig deeper on like how people can build their own personal brand identities.
I'm so glad to hear that. It's funny because I feel like I've done a lot of different things, and that was the nature of the industry and the environment that I was in, right? Mm-hmm. Like, there weren't jobs. So whatever job came my way, I did it. And if there is a brand for me, it's that I start things and I can make them, make people care, you know, about those things. But it didn't look like that on my way here. Mm. You know, it looked like, okay, so now what do I do? Okay, I started the skincare line. Okay, I'm going to shut down the skincare line. Okay, I'm going to go back to school. Okay, I'm going to go, you know, like, it was okay, I need this job. I'm going to give food tours because I need a job. Like, it didn't look like that coming here. But what I do know is that the entire time I was very clear on what I'm good at and what I wanted to be known for, you know? So very easily, I'm like, it's very clear. Okay, Celeste is good at web design, you know? Mm-hmm. And so eventually people who wanted help in web design knew that about me and would just hit me up. Everything has been word of mouth. And so like my thing is that to get to this point, I had to do a lot of good work. You know, a lot of good work and represent my own work and do a great job, because otherwise I really wouldn't have been able to make it. I've literally been freelancing for the last 15 years. I've not had a sit down job. I've never had a salary. So it's really had to come from me, and I've had to be me in every single situation. And so it's like, when you say building a personal brand, I think the goal is to build your personal skill set and also the kind of person you want to be when you're working with others. And that gets you pretty far. It's not your following. It's not your Instagram. It's like, it's, you know, it's literally what can you do when you're in the room.
Celeste, you have no idea how much this fits. Will and I were just talking about this earlier today, because we're talking about this idea of like, you know, there's so many talented people in the world. There's so many people who put so much information out. Like, how do you find success? How will people find you? And I was quoting, I watched this interview with Mr. Beast, like this famous YouTuber, you know, and he was saying that, like, pretty much, like, if your videos are good, like, people will watch them, like, frankly speaking, like, if your quality is good, if you make the best t-shirt in the world, if you have the best iPhone product, like, if it's so good, you consistently just prove such quality products, like, you will do well. And I think that's what you've absolutely shown, like, over the last 15 years. You've dedicated yourself, you've grown. But throughout that time as well, like, you weren't in school, like, you were kind of learning on the go as well. So like, how did you almost like course correct throughout these last 15 years as well? Like, okay, I need to know, like, the last 15 years, I can't even imagine the technology products that have been able to come out in like the graphic design world. Like, how did you like, okay, now it's time to learn about TikTok. Okay, now it's time to learn the full Adobe suite. Like, how would you continue to learn, and like, who was pushing you? How was that?
I'm self-taught on everything. So like Adobe Illustrator, right? Like coding. I always say that the reason why I've gotten this far is because I've always had the courage to learn. When you don't have certainty, when things aren't set, you know, like basically when things are just out there and you're not sure what's going to happen, there's one thing you can do and it is learn. And I realized very early on, you know, like I realized very early on that I actually took a music technology class in school. I was a music, I was a music minor. And I mean, like, I really was like, this is so cool. But music tech went from, it started off with like the piano to the, you know, like cassette tapes to whatever. And and by that time, like iTunes was new, you know, and I could feel in this class, my professors, and also not even just there, but also in my journalism class, being a little hesitant to jump into the new space. Mm-hmm. But, and so like this class on music technology really kind of, it shaped what I thought, you know, you have to be an early adopter. You cannot be as scared of what's coming next. You have to learn about it. And once you learned about it, you can decide. But like, but if you invested a ton in, you know, cassette tapes, right when cassette tapes were going to go out of style, then you're screwed. If you invested a ton in CDs and you were like, I'm never going to go into MP3, you're screwed. Like, so I just didn't, I was like, okay, I was seeing my professors be like, I don't know about this digital stuff. We're not accepting YouTube links for your videos. It's like, but that's where the next level is. Yeah. So what's so scary about it and learning about it is how I you know, gained all the skills to be able to work in those spaces. And there are things that are, you know, that you can carry from anywhere to anywhere else, right? So for me, being able to tell a clear story, no matter where I'm at, that's something that's really cool. I can do that on a website. I can do that in a video. You can do that through graphics. Being able to make something visual, you know, visually interesting, that all still applies. It's really kind of interesting how all of this, regardless of people saying the tech changes, what people seek from that tech has not. You know, we seek very specific things. Maybe it is information, maybe it's inspiration, and maybe it's education. Who knows? Those are the three pillars of like what you're doing in marketing. And that doesn't matter it doesn't matter what medium you're using.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And it seems like through everything that you were doing, like this idea of being like an early adopter or not being scared of change has really been at the forefront of your like philosophy when you adopt new projects, which I absolutely love. And I think it really shows quite clearly in your most recent launch of Droplet. I think it's like a space, like health drinks, specifically health food and beverage, and putting that as a priority is kind of like a new space that Droplet's really tackling. So I'd love to hear more about what sparked Droplet. What was kind of the origin story behind it?
Droplet was started in a moment of burnout, like many businesses that where people were like, I've had enough of how I've been doing it. Let's do something else. And like I said, there has been a struggle story here. So I have my branding studio, WellFed. We've done a lot of really good work. And at the time, I was just not taking care of myself because I was like, oh my God, I want to take on all of these projects. I want to, you know, like I want to keep my clients happy, but I wasn't keeping myself happy. And I wasn't taking care of my health. You know, I would say the crack hit the fan, since this is a student-led thing. But I would say that like, you know, another pitfall of freelancing is that sometimes people don't pay you. They just feel like they don't have to because they don't, you know, and I hate that. But most freelancers will have experienced non-payment in their careers. And for me, it was a big non-payment issue that made me feel like, what the hell am I doing building somebody else's dream and not getting what I, you know, not getting valued not for it, you know, not being able to also live afterwards. So that for me, I was like, okay, I know I'm good at this. I know we're good at doing this for other people. Why not do this for ourselves? And literally I was like, okay, 2 weeks, I don't want any more clients. I just want to think, let's figure out an idea. And it was funny because I was so stressed out at the time. I was going to the hospital. I was sick. I was like, oh my God, I was like pre-diabetic. It was a lot, you know? And I just, when they say it's stress, I didn't realize that stress isn't just emotional. It's obviously a physical thing. There is a cortisol, you know, like I think that that's something that we totally underestimate, especially women. We just assume that women are going to be stressed out. We don't assume that they could also do something about that stress.
Yeah.
You know? And so my parents, they're actually both in the medical field. They're Filipino and they still love their herbal remedies. They're, you know, like all of that. And they would just be like, hey, just drink this, just drink this. And, mm-hmm. you know, it worked. And I was like, okay, there's method to the madness, right? There's like magic in these things that have been around for centuries, thousands of years. And so, like I said, it was like 2 weeks of being like, what idea will we, what will we do? What will we do? And then I found out that like adaptogens really worked. I didn't like the taste because at the end of the day, adaptogens are, you know, they're basically ground up roots and leaves and mushrooms. Tastes like dirt, honestly, when you're eating it and drinking mm-hmm. it. And for me, I was like, I, at the time, was the kind of girl who drank Kool-Aid instead of water because I didn't like the taste of water. Like, how healthy I was. And so I would be like, okay, I can't do this every day. How do we make this better? I can't be the only person struggling. So I did that. I was like, okay, the idea is, how do we make adaptogens taste better and look better? And then I hit up my co-founder. She's a food scientist at Wanderlust Creamery. She's incredible. She has like the most creative palate, but also she's a like food scientist. So she can figure out how to make things happen in wow. like such an amazing way. And so we sat down and I was like, here, taste all of these herbs and dust and powders. We tasted each one and we were just like, okay, 17 flavors later, you know, like here we are, we've got droplets. So, and the design came intuitively as well because I was just like, I want it to be pretty. Like I'm stressed out. I want to look at something that doesn't make me feel stressed out. I felt like men's products, like typically products that have adaptogens or performance, you know, ingredients, they're like yelling at you. I don't really need to be yelled at all day. You know, like I don't need protein. I don't need caffeine. Like it was just like that on the cans. And I was like, nah, I want art on my desk. I want art on my desk and something that helps me with my stress that isn't alcohol or coffee. And that's how we came up with Droplet.
I absolutely love that.
Beautiful.
I think one of the things, I love art and design. I've always had like an eye for graphic design. And so when I visited your website for the first time, the first response I had, and I even noted it down, it was this like sense of calmness. Because oftentimes, like even I was on the rowing team for like a couple semesters. And when I was on the team, like every single energy gel, every single energy drink or Powerade or something like that was like screaming at my face to like have more energy, to be like performing at my best. And when I saw Droplet, I was like, wow, like it just feels so calm. And I don't think I've seen a drink and the packaging and everything that has that like calming effect to it. And I love how it's both in the branding, but also in like the ingredients and the way that you have like crafted the product. So just wanted to give a shout out to the graphic design of the website.
Yeah, and thanks to my team. Like it's an all female team, you know? And I think that was what created the understanding of how it had to be built. You know, we had the flavors, we knew what they tasted like, and we were like, okay, well, how would this feeling get translated onto these cans and onto this website, onto this box? And we started there, feelings first.
That's so powerful. The idea, like, how do you translate a feeling, like the feeling of feeling calm? Because usually people want the feeling of like taking action. The idea of translating the feeling almost like of inaction, which is like almost the most important thing ever. Like, it's like, I assume the same way people want to design, like, it's like the feeling of when you touch this, you feel calm and you feel as it's like, not, of course, you've got the science, you've got the biotech behind it, but also like you see the colors, it signifies to you, like, it's just, that mental thing, like now it's my time, it's my self-care time. And like the transparency as well, drink Droplet is fantastic. Like even on your website, you have the ingredients with the origins are from and the purposes as well. Cause some people just, the more ingredients, the better. And like, no. Like why are you drinking? What's it coming from? Like, what's the thing behind it? Like everyone wants to put as much thing in it, but like, I appreciate how there's that transparency as well, because there are so many consumer products out there and there's only more, which is fantastic because there's more platforms, more entrepreneurs to grow. But being really intentional behind why you want to create that is becoming a rarity. And I think you guys have really hit the nail on the head with that in terms of like why you want to bring something to Droplet and like what the purpose is behind and how it's serving you and also serving your customers and your community. So I absolutely love that. And you also mentioned that it's been a all-female team, which is absolutely fantastic. So what's it like being a women founder in the F&B space? Do you find that it's a more male-dominated space, pretty equal? Have you felt welcomed? what's been your experience with building that team up as well?
A female founder in food and beverage is actually so cool because the female founder community, we know we got to stick together, you know, like we know we're thinking of things and we're not trying to compete with each other. Everybody has their own angles, which is really nice. Like I was at Expo West the other day, which is the biggest natural foods expo in the country, I mean, even the world, basically. And I was just walking around and Maya French, the founder of Koya, was like, Celeste, and I hadn't met her before. You know, and she's like, I totally have been watching what you're doing. And Koya is a big deal, you know, like they are in basically nationwide and they got started before we did. She's a Black female founder in the beverage world. Like that was so cool. You know, there's none of this, like there's you and there's me and we compete for the same shelf space. It's none of that because there's something for everyone. I will say though, it is difficult because there is a traditional world, right? Where like beverage has traditionally been male dominated. And that's why saying like even the design doesn't speak to women, like even the product that we put out there, you know, what you're drinking, does it help women, you know? And I've learned that a lot of those people are afraid to market to women only because they feel like that's cutting out 50% of their potential sales. And I'm, to be real with you, 80% of sales in the grocery space and in health and wellness is done by women, you know? Yeah, like
very true,
right?
It's about 50%.
Right? So, I mean, like, that's a B+, guys. That is not a D-. So those are the walls that I hit sometimes, where people who are in the traditional world who aren't really looking forward to women's healthness, or women's health or women's wellness, they're a little bit stuck in this, like, well, you know, men aren't going to like it. Ugh, the cans are too feminine. Blah, blah, blah. I was like, you can drink it. You won't grow boobs. I say that just to make them feel uncomfortable because
I love it.
All of this stuff, it's you know, all of this stuff, it is actually inclusive. It's just that, you know, our product packaging is just a little more artistic than you're used to on the shelf. It's, you know, and it's done by an incredible artist. Barbara is so incredible. She's from London. She's Brazilian Italian and she like did such a great work with the artwork. And it was one of those things where every time I hold it, I'm just like, oh, and I can't believe that people would be like, oh no, too much for my masculine soul.
One of my favorite memories, I think growing up, was always like tagging along with my mom to the grocery store and her like comparing like pasta packaging or like rice packaging. And like, sometimes we just choose the one that looks like better. And so,
right.
And it even happens now, like over winter break, she brought me to Whole Foods and we were looking at like different kombuchas and she's like, this packaging is nice. Like, let's take this one for no other reason besides that it looked nicer. So I definitely agree with you. Like, people need to tap in more to like the women, like the people who are actually buying the products.
Absolutely. I actually just read this book. It's called Invisible Woman. And then there's many books that have a similar sentiment to this, but it's like how the world has literally been designed for men. Like the food you eat, the phones we hold, the tables, like every single time they're like, let's have someone test out this product before it's released. It's like a 50-year-old white man.
Like even medicine, right? Like they say
medicine, huge.
Take two pills and be done with it. I'm like, that's typically created for a 165-pound male. If you do that, that's why the effect is so crazy and different, right?
Yes.
Wow.
That's why they're like, I need to sit down, da, 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 da. That's why they say nothing's ever tested on pregnant women. That's why they say don't put any in pregnant, like they don't test pregnant women. So they're just like, you're a mystery for 9 months, sorry.
Right, they don't even test SPF on people of darker skin tones. So like, there's a lot of invisibility going on, right? And that's the thing is like, I think that's part of why it's so hard, because white male privilege is so hard to see, to be honest, right? 100%. It is so hard to see when somebody has that privilege, especially a male, and especially a you know, like in these particular areas. They actually don't know that it's difficult because they've never had to experience that, you know? So for me, walking into the store and, you know, light bulb finally being like, yeah, why are all these drinks so gender neutral and male masculine leaning, when I know for a fact that I love being feminine? You know what I mean? That like, it's not a bad thing to be feminine.
100%.
And it took until me to be like, let's do this. Do you know what I mean? Like it took until me to be like, okay, I think this shelf needs a little more female on it. And by female, I mean like woman, femininity. And that's, That's something that I will always be here for, because we also need to stop discrediting women, women-owned businesses, and the businesses that cater to women. These are big businesses, guys, you know, like, but a lot of people will not value them similarly because they aren't what, you know, like, a lot of people don't want women to be successful for the things that make women happy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, wow. It's like, oh, it's not a tech company. It's not smart enough. It's like, so it still makes $1 billion, Spanx.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Like the richest family in Canada, at least my mom was growing up, they made French fries. Everyone makes French fries, or it's like toilet paper. Every single person uses toilet paper. You can create a product that every single person's going to love and is just so in part of your routine. Of course people are going to love it. Like if it's like, okay, lunchtime, let's grab a drink. Like, are you kidding me? Like,
yeah,
more of the people, it's not trying to make someone feel left out or like they can't achieve a product. Some products are meant to be there to be there for that person just as they are, their feminine side, not trying to try to like hype themselves up or like drink that like protein energy boosting drink. Just like, no, I feel good drinking this. Like, that's fine. That's good.
Yeah. There's a lot of different ways we could be doing more for women.
100%.
You know, a lot of different ways. And especially, yeah. And there's a lot of ways to make money.
Yeah. I think so often, especially in college, like there's like three paths to making money. Like you go into finance, you go into consulting, you go into tech. And I think that a lot of the work that we try to do, even with this podcast, is show successful women who have built paths in non-conventional ways and really just show people that like it's possible and it's out there. And so, yeah, just like even going through your story and how like unconventional is so inspiring. But something else that we'd love to touch on is also kind of unconventional. And you were just mentioning this before we started the podcast, but Droplet is actually choosing to do raising funds from fans. And we'd love to dive a little deeper on what it's like to fundraise as a woman in food and beverage, but more importantly, why you chose to raise funds from fans using platforms like Newmarket.
Yeah. So... fundraising is actually a lot harder than it looks, especially
women,
right? I have a belief that women of color have to be excellent in every space. There is no space for women of color to be to make a mistake. And so, you know, with what we do, our pitch decks, my presentations, everything like that. Like I actually, one big part of my business as a brand design studio is that we create the pitch decks for celebrities, VIPs to start, you know, like to start their businesses. And so I know how to put these things together. And so it's kind of crazy that when it's mine, and because I'm this woman coming into this room, no matter what kind of accessibility or, you know, like resources that I have, it's still a little harder for women. And especially now that there's a pandemic, right? That we launched during a pandemic and we had to make it work. And that meant that a lot of the things like traditional resources, distribution, all the milestones that a company who had started 2 years ago, 3 years ago, even just 6 months before us, would have been able to do and look at for pretty much the first 2 years of our business, right? Mm-hmm. It's easier to invest in a business that launches during the pandemic because they're like, oh, maybe this is time for them to do this. And it was also easier to invest in a business that started before the pandemic because there's so much less uncertainty around that, right? Like they probably were able to build the momentum. They might've lost some things, but especially in the food and bev, like a lot of people were so much more willing to try something new. The supply chain situation made it so that they had to. And also sometimes people just comfort eat, you know? And so that was one thing that we found very difficult was, and it's not to say that like, that the venture capitalists are sexist. They are not. They're really absolutely looking for people like me. But at the same time, my company was just at the wrong place, wrong time for something like that to be a smart decision for a venture capitalist, right? Mm-hmm. Like literally, we couldn't, there was a lot we just couldn't do. I couldn't do tastings because we couldn't be in person. Mm-hmm. So that was really important for me to really understand because otherwise I'd feel like a failure. But at the end of the day, I look at my company and we're, you know, like we're in 450 stores now. Like, and we did that without help.
Incredible.
We did that with the help of FAIR, which is an incredible program. But basically what I'm trying to say is there are different ways and it's up to me and founders like me to find them and uplift them. So with Newmarket, what's really cool is that you as a fan get to invest in a company you want to keep alive, basically. And it creates this really cool feedback loop of where you get a brand credit to use in my shop and buy my products, and that keeps us alive. It makes a big difference. And so the reasons why this is smart for us is because we know that we have a community that wants to see us survive. So we went through this entire thing with PepsiCo last summer, and you know, overnight we went viral from like 1,000 followers to 16 something thousand more. And all those people want to see us exist. They want to see us thrive. And that's why something like this is perfect for us. But it also works for companies that have, you know, a local footprint that really people want them to be around. They love what they do, like the taco shop or whatever. We're just a DTC business that has a bunch of fans that really want us to stick around. And I think that's the most important capital. It's funding from the customer that actually wants you versus having to convince a VC that there's a world out there, that there's a market for this product that you're creating.
I think it's so powerful as well, because people always talk about doing their customer, you know, focus groups, hearing about, you know, what their customers think, but like customers are literally funding and founding your company in many ways. And I think this also sort of ties into the idea of like where kind of Web3 is going. I know that's not necessarily the business you're in, but like if you think of Web3, people like owning the internet, there's also this derivative of people wanting to own their own businesses, not like in a stock relationship that's been established, but like the decision-making, like everyone's a board member in that case. Yeah. Like that's cool. And there's a huge movement as well, like for YouTube videos as well, where you can like invest in a YouTube video before the video is made because you believe in the idea. And then let's say you own 5% of the YouTube video, you get 5% of the revenue that comes in from the AdSense. Like right. All these ideas are crazy. So how do you see this whole, like, would you recommend this to a founder who maybe is thinking about looking to pitch to a VC right now? Like what would be your number one piece of advice to someone who maybe hasn't had the best luck with the VCs, but still super passionate about their idea and wants to see it grow?
You know, there are so many different ways to raise money, right? There's actually a bunch. It just really depends on the kind of company you have and the kind of company you're looking to build, right? So for me, I am very interested in keeping a bigger stake of my business. You know, for the first 2 years of this, it really was a very lean team and blood, sweat, and tears. And so somebody coming in and taking 50% of that would really like not be right for me right now, you know? And especially since we have a product-based business. Now for service-based businesses, tech, that kind of thing, absolutely. Sometimes it's a lot easier to get that money up front from traditional funds, especially if it's a great idea. But it really depends on the kind of business that you have, the growth that you're looking for, and the community you're trying to build. Because sometimes, like for us, authenticity is the number one thing, right? We want to build our brand authentically. And when you get that kind of money, you have to start making sacrifices on that end a lot of times, right? There's the shareholders that you have to make happy. And in this way, our shareholder is the person who's already wanting us to be here. You know, it's already the customer, and it's already them being excited about what we're bringing to the table. And that gives us a lot of freedom and a lot more, I'd say, it's like a validating point in a way that venture funding and those decisions made by, you know, maybe 5-6 people in a VC firm make.
Yeah. It feels like a very like reaffirming way to do fundraising. I feel like a lot of the founders we talk to, they say that first of all, fundraising is like a full-time job on top of being a founder. Yeah. But second of all, if you're constantly pushing an idea that you and your team so believe in and keep getting no's, it feels less affirming than if you know that the people who are funding you and the people who you're raising from actually love your product and want you to stick around. So. Yeah. I think it's a beautiful model that I honestly didn't know until you told us about. So I'm so glad that we can kind of dive into that. But as we begin to wrap up the podcast, we have a couple of ending questions we love to ask our guests. One of the first ones is on your website, you have this beautiful quote that says, "Honor yourself with your hustle." What about this quote resonated with you?
I forgot that I wrote that. So this is my best friend, Branche. She runs the Honey Block. It's a wellness and it's like a wellness platform for people of color, especially here in Los Angeles and, you know, South Los Angeles. There's not really a lot of places to be safe in when it comes to wellness. And she led a Nipsey Hussle yoga class. And she had us put our hands out and she's like, receive. She's like, you're going to receive the message. we're listening to Nipsey Hussle, whatever. And she said, honor yourself. And then the lyric that hit right after was with your hustle. Like, so I'm listening to her and then Nipsey responded with your hustle. And wow. That I was like, oh my God. And if you knew what I was going through before that, I was literally like so burnt out. And I was like, oh my God, what's the point of doing any of this? If I'm not, you know, like if I'm not even able to live because of the work that I'm doing, you know, and honor yourself with your hustle. The reason why it resonates with me is do your best work for you.
Mm. Wow. Yeah.
Do your best work for you. Hustle for you. It's literally the only thing that you can do for your, like, it's like giving to yourself is, and so it's like, you cannot expect or wait for somebody else to make the path forward easier, for someone to give you that job or whatever. You have to honor yourself. And sometimes it takes a lot of hustle.
I love that. I also love how you say, I feel like there's such a hustle culture and people say like hustle period or like work hard period. And nobody ever says work hard for yourself or hustle for yourself. And wow, that just really hit some strings.
I'm glad. It's the idea that you're doing it for you. Yeah.
I forgot that I put it up there though, but that is something that like you reminding me of that moment was something really special right now.
Oh, I'm so happy. Okay. So on that note, what is something that you love about yourself?
Something that I love about myself? I love that I went to all girls high school, so I never learned to not interrupt a man.
I love that.
Sorry, you're gonna throw me in a room. I'm never here like, oh, he's still talking. It's like, no, it's my turn.
Beautiful, I love that. What a good trait to have as well. And then to end us off today, oh, we have two more questions, apologies. What are you grateful for today?
Today I'm grateful for, oh my gosh, just new life. A really good friend of mine just had a baby and I just can't believe like yesterday she did it and now today she's, you know what I mean? And it's
oh
like,
my God, yeah.
And I'm a very spiritual person and I'm just like, look at that. The cycle goes on and here we have this new soul that we get to like show the world to, you know, and it's super exciting.
Wow.
I hope we get to build a world for this baby that like, you know, we're really proud of. So
definitely will. Definitely. I love that. And to finish us off, what does it mean to you to be an entrepreneur?
It's honoring myself. It's totally that, right? That's what it means. It's my future is in my hands. And that is something that I didn't know for a long time. I was waiting for a long time. And it turns out that, as Mariah Carey says, the hero lies in you.
Very true. Very, very, very true. The Mariah Carey, the Disney. I see all the influences. Well, thank you so much for coming on. We've had such a blast talking to you, hearing about your journey, hearing just invaluable advice about starting a business, but also growing your personal brand, not for the outside, but for yourself, and to honor yourself, honoring your own hustle. So thank you so much for coming on, Celeste.
Thank you for having me, you guys. I'm so happy that you have a podcast like this.
Thank you. And for our audience who want to continue to follow your journey and Droplet's journey, how and where can they do that?
You can follow my journey at Celeste Perez on Instagram or CelestePerez.com and Droplet at DrinkDroplet.com. And it's also DrinkDroplet on Instagram.
I love it. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we hope to see you soon.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
That wraps it up for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. We hope hearing from Celeste and Droplet inspires you to pursue entrepreneurial ideas rooted from your identity and experience.
If you like this episode, subscribe to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you're listening to us now. Even better, please leave us a 5-star review and share your thoughts on the podcast.
Want to get in touch, send a question, or suggest a guest? We read every one of our emails and DMs, so please feel free to reach out to us via LinkedIn or Instagram. You can check us out at The Entrepreneurs Network everywhere. You can also check out the show notes for more ways to chat.
The Entrepreneurs Podcast is just one of the podcast shows under The Entrepreneurs Network. Each podcast show explores its own niche community of women entrepreneurs. To explore our other podcast shows under The Entrepreneurs Network, check out theentrepreneursnetwork.com. Thank you to our amazing team, especially Stephanie and Zoe with their help on today's podcast.